This is an interview with Kay Gapin, director of the UW-Madison Libraries. The date is March 3rd, 1988. I'm Laura Smale, doing the interview for the UW-Madison Archives Oral History Project. And we're talking in her office. And have you done others?
No. We only did her as a...
You have an event that is happening right now, which has to do with some of the problems that the campus is concerned about now. Oh, tape... Yes.
Talk, yes.
One, two, mm-hmm. three. Okay. The one of the questions that gets asked of me more at Alabama when I was there, because I was the first woman dean, and somewhat here, is what is it like to be a woman on a campus like this and to be a senior administrator? Want to turn that off? And generally here, I have found it to be... Not without some difficulties, but not so hard to do either, and you never can tell why that's the case. You know, if you're the way you are and everybody else is the way they are, and I'm not schooled in feminism, and I'm not only now beginning to pick up on some things that I might not have been aware before. So I'm still trying to figure out my context. But two things have happened that are very, I guess three things with Donna Shalala coming. The first thing is that as soon as Irv announced that he was going to leave, all of the senior administrators in Bascom started to jockey for power. And relationships changed. People started new initiatives. It was not a good time to start a new initiative if you were one level lower, unless you had a pretty strong case to be made, because people were trying to figure out how they were going to fit into her new administration. And I did not hear, but some of my women friends heard some of the regular kinds of stories that about single women in positions of power who are coming in. She was butch and she was lesbian, and all of her friends were that she had worked with, some of them were here in town, and did you know that Donna Shalala slept with Madame X and things, you know, ugly kinds of things. Not a lot of them, but they happen. And to see her come with such enormous talent and ability and drive and vision and experience, much more broadly focused than anybody I have seen here on the campus. Broadly focused about the relationship of higher education to life and to society, which we are not oblivious to on the campus, but we don't have the dimension that she has of it, that it is essentially important to individuals, not for its own sake, but for what it does for them. Sometimes I hear discussions about higher education for its own sake, or research for the sake of new knowledge, but not so much for the sake of the individual involved in it or the state being touched by it or something like that. And when you add to that the fact that she has a deep social commitment and that she has broad experience in relating higher education to social issues, many of which don't exist in this state to the degree that they exist in New York, you just get a powerful combination of abilities. Besides which, she's incredibly organized. Irv was very organized. He read everything, but I never seen anybody read as much and be up on detail about things. But it didn't get focused into progressive actions. I think by the time that I came here, he was pretty much on the defensive with system. And in fact, I didn't think that we were very assertive or aggressive, or, I mean, we were certainly aggressive, but we were not proactive. We weren't carrying our new message out to the state. We were just reacting with our old message to the challenges that we were facing. And that's certainly one reason why the regents are acting in such a strong manner right now. If they don't, they lose the whole system, I think. So she came, and I go to the dean's meetings when they meet with her, and I have news, Laura. It hasn't been announced yet, but I've been made a dean too.
Have you?
Yes. I'm just as pleased as punch about it, and it'll probably be announced sometime this spring.
Splendid.
But when I came, it was a negotiating point. You can't really run a big library related to academic program system without seeing how the deans are talking with the chancellor. And when I go to the dean's meetings, I often don't say anything, but I'm watching. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
And the way that she runs the meeting, she gets about the same amount of work done in half the time. And the Madison plan was a tremendous challenge to her to get people to accept a new attitude. It wasn't just that she wanted some kind of rational quick fix. She wanted a new attitude. And she, in presenting the plan, which got developed so quickly, she'd have Phil Certain present the plan. Bernie was still on vacation. Joe Corey would be there, and then she would say to the deans, now, what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? And involve them in not the nitty-gritties of which they eventually did, of what they could be doing, but how were they actually going to try to integrate minority thinking into the academic programs. She got them to validate it with their approval, and their attitude began to change. You could see it in the way that they were sitting around the table. And then at one point she came to them and said, now we've got to talk about this ethnic course. I know how I want to do it, but I would rather have it come from the deans, though I could go to the Faculty Senate to do it. And what she was giving them was, first, I need you to help me. Second of all, this, I'm telling you right now that I want you to do something, but if you don't want to do it, I will go and do it another way. And of course, they all said that they would do it, and they would adopt a coordinated method through the courses that were already offered to put together the credits for the minority educational unit. But, and I think they are still on the early road of transition from a university run by men, and it will increase. It's going to be a very, very long time before that changes, I think, particularly from the faculty level until there are more women here, to a university that's going to look at, and particularly deans, who are going to look at issues not from the focus of men running a university last year, but from people running a university into the future. And they're gradually, the attitudes toward her are shifting a little bit. She surely is no longer godlike in the sense of going to carry a persona that's superwoman. On the other hand, she is so incredibly good at what she does that the respect is growing, while I think some of the rhetoric of what she is like. And then at the same time, now everybody's adjusting into the new pecking order. Well, all of that is good, and it's going to take a long time for that to evolve. If she makes key appointments of women quickly, that will help a great deal. But I was struck very much by how long the changes are going to take when you start talking about attitudes changing across the whole campus. We had a librarian who was working with group of faculty, two departments, zoology and botany, and the biology library. And there's a prominent botanist, Hugh Iltis, who is brilliant. You know Hugh?
Mm, yes.
Yeah. And who loves the library, who, if he could, would make it the biggest and the best library in the country. He tries to get money. You know, he takes an intense interest in how it's organized. And he's been perceived in the past to be too intrusive into the daily operations of the library. A difficult man to handle for most people, I think. And in 1982, while Joe Trace was still here, the librarian, Sylvia Watson, was a staff member in this area, and she did affirmative action and personnel kinds of things, but did not have a personality that was very smooth with that kind of work, and also just had some incorrect answers often enough that they finally reached an agreement that she would move out of the administrative responsibilities and she'd go to Steenbach and be an operational librarian. And she did that, and then she was there a couple of years and then transferred to biology, which had a vacancy. Well, it had a person in it, they just switched people. And she was acting, and she was still the acting biology librarian when I came here. So she'd been working with Hugh since 82, and I came in 84. And we got ready to do a search for the position because the zoology people and the botany people really want somebody with a biology background, and Sylvia's is in another science area, but not that. And we had the search going on, and Sylvia, I think, had decided not to be a candidate when the state budget repair bill occurred. We lost 28 positions, and that's one that we just froze and made Sylvia the permanent biology librarian. And about that time, I think partly because the botany department also cut its budget for the library, she started having more work to do with less staff because of the changes that are occurring in the libraries. We're just adding new areas of information and technological approaches all the time. She had been one of the whole group of librarians that had gone through a titling process to give people a career ladder, and she was titled at the first level, which is really an entry level, and she felt that was inappropriate given her experience, and she was not, did not grieve that, but was not ever happy with that answer. And also, I think the person who had chaired the committee, Mac Pisano, he and Hugh Iltis alternated in chairing the biology library committee. Mac went on leave, and Hugh began to chair the committee. And almost immediately, they began to clash. And they were small clashes. They were Hugh clashes. And but the pattern got established that Sylvia couldn't figure out what to do about them. And she began to avoid him. And he was more persistent in things that he wanted from the library. And she eventually got to the point where she went to Mercia Lee in Minority Affairs and talked with her about it, feeling that there were racial overtones to the incidents. And Mercia talked to Phil Certain, and Phil Certain talked to me, and I went and talked to Sylvia, and yes, indeed, she thought that. We went to talk to Bonnie Ortiz, and Bonnie Ortiz said, no, it looked like there was nothing there that was racial or gender related. It looked like a work environment problem. So I went to talk to Cronin and to Eldon Newcomb, who's the chairman of the department, and they agreed that Eldon would go and talk to Hugh and tell him to give Sylvia some space. And at the same time, is this too much?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At the same time, Sylvia was to write down documentation about the incidents that had occurred. And that was August of 87 that we agreed that she would write the documentation. Eldon Newcomb talked to Hugh Iltis, and he said he would stay away. And then he began nothing happened. Sylvia didn't document the incidents. And she would meet regularly with Frank Bright, to whom she reports, and she wouldn't have had time to do it. And finally, early in January, I decided that we would have a meeting anyway without the documentation, because Hugh had by that time heard that Sylvia had been to talk to Barney Ortiz and that she was being racially harassed, and he was hurt and outraged because of his deep commitment to racial equality. And by that point then, he was angry. Sylvia was frightened and wrote very quickly a 10-page document listing a series of incidents that occurred from before the time she was in the biology library until through the period that she had been there. And I got that. We had a meeting with Phil Certain again and decided that this should be a formal grievance. And we had to write a remedy for what should occur. So Sylvia talked through a remedy a little bit with Phil Certain, and then Frank worked with her to write it up. And we gave that all to Hugh and had a meeting on Monday. Monday this week, with Dave Cronin, Mac Pisano, Hugh Eltis, Eldon Newcomb, myself, and Phil Certain. And Phil and I had gone to see Hugh on Friday with the papers, and Hugh was himself. He was irascible, he was angry, he was really very angry by this time. He was threatened, and he was outraged. And furthermore, from her side, Sylvia had not taken the initiative to meet with the faculty. I mean, so there was no perfect person mm-hmm. in all of this. I wasn't perfect either. I thought we had informed the two departments that she was permanent, and come to find out we had not. So all of this time, since 84, they had thought that, or 85, I guess, they had thought she was temporary. Hmm. So it was not a very good situation. Hugh came to the meeting a changed man. He was calm. He was not belligerent. He was put upon. He said, yes, he was gruff, but the onus should not be completely on him. He was organized. And the men sitting around the table were very, very serious, because it was a serious event. And I was very sympathetic to Hugh. I tend to think that the fault was more on my side and Sylvia's side than on his, although I've never been the recipient of bad feelings from him. And as he worked his way through his argument, Phil got him to try to understand something that Phil had tried to get him to understand something on Friday, which was, did he see that he had any responsibility for the things that had happened? And he does not. He does not say anything else other than the fact that he's gruff. Well, as Phil tried to do that one more time, very clearly, Dave Cronin cut him off and turned the discussion to a simple negotiation on a compromise position about where the books were going to be housed. Moved the discussion away from Hugh's responsibility for his actions, and at that same point then asked him if he was ready to meet some of the remedy activities, and did he want to resolve this informally rather than have a review board. And he said yes, he did. Well, the discussion changed just like that, Laura. All the men relaxed except for Phil. They didn't care anymore if they had decided that it was not, I think, in essence, his fault. He was being Hugh. Sylvia had her problems, and her documentation didn't help because it was just unorganized and messy and illogical and wrong grammar and bad words, and you know, and they closed ranks around that fella. They weren't going to hold his feet to the fire anymore. And Dave Cronin, when I met with him on and Eldon on this, in that in his office, he was going to be very tough, cut off Hugh's library privileges, and do this and that. And when he came to the meeting, as soon as that happened, they just closed ranks right around him. And then I got, first I couldn't believe it, and then I got angry, and it, as we were then going through tying up some of the loose ends about how we were going to proceed, he said again that he thought she was just emotional about these things.
Dave Cronin said this.
Hugh Wilton said it. Ooh. Yeah. And I said, Hugh, don't you realize that if she and the staff there perceive this, it's not what you do, it's how you're doing it, and you've got to change that. And that just went across the air like a lamb. Didn't mean anything to anybody. And I thought, well, now I know how we're going to deal with this. We're just going to deal with this in a very behavioral way. We'll keep Hugh away from the library. He'll work through the committee. We'll have to strengthen that library faculty committee. We'll have to get Sylvia to act in a more organized manner. But nothing more is going to happen to have this person look at himself. And I hadn't thought, actually, in the beginning, Laura, that he needed to look at himself a heck of a lot, if we could just get some space between the two of them. And then I saw the guy, in essence, lie. He did not really lie. He said everything on Monday that he had said on Friday. But every encounter I've had with him about this, he gets absolutely furious. And when he's with Sylvia, he gets absolutely furious. And he came on Monday, and he was absolutely calm. And I know that's not the way he feels about this. So in a way, he put on a facade, and it worked, and it made everybody comfortable. And I think that I don't know if women would have done that the same way. I just can't tell, but that was such a conscious closing of the door, and they were all so comfortable with it. And I think that just the way that our social community works here, that's going to happen time and time again, and I'm beginning to have a lot more understanding of the way that academic staff people feel when they are trying to get recognition for their efforts and their commitment, because you can just see that door of, I'm faculty, I'm different, swing down, and then you're left out here trying to figure out how you can continue to be committed to something.
But this was, I'm men, we're different.
Yes, yeah. And but by and large, a lot, since so many of the faculty are men, it just happens time and again.
Did you didn't comment on this, I don't suppose, at the time?
Oh, not there, no. Phil Certain and I emailed each other back and forth that night about it. He asked me what I thought happened, and I told him something very much like this, and that I was a little disgusted by the whole thing.
And what did he say?
Well, he was flying away, and so he hasn't gotten it yet. So when he gets back, I'm going to see what he says. I don't think he was pleased either. I mean, it's not pleased, but I don't think he felt that something substantive happened in Hugh beginning to recognize at least some part of it being him. And maybe that's too much to think.
Can the problem really be solved by, I mean, Hugh must have to go to the library and she's going to be there.
Actually, nobody thinks it can be, because it's happened before. And so there'll probably be a period where it'll work all right. But what has happened in the past is that the library committee has not been active. Hugh is the strongest proponent and tends to take the library under his wing. if we can keep the library committee active and keep many of the orders for materials going through them, even though he'll come back to the library and may continue to not be too pleased about some things that are happening there, I think we could keep a formal committee between her and him mm-hmm. in terms of what he wants from the library and the priorities of the whole faculty. And I think that's fair, and I think we could continue that if we're vigilant. But it may be the case, Laura, that the more that Donna's here and the greater her ability to enable people who want things to change, the more rapidly some of it might change. Some of it we think about and talk about it in the old ways, and I'm often struck about her talking about the same thing but from a different perspective, and it wakes people up and they think about it differently. So she may indeed do what I had thought the way she's going to get the university to change is not by being one person, because you can't hardly do it when you're one person. And I have discussions with all my friends about it. They say, I don't see how she can get the university to change. And I think the way she's going to do that is that she's going to find all the people who think the way she thinks is important, and she's going to enable them to do things. You know, she's got Mary Rouse now mm-hmm. coming into her weekly administrative meetings. And she's going to enable all those people and empower them to do things. And that's how you can move such a large and complex community. It's by getting all of the people who are committed to the same thing doing something. And that doesn't take forever. And anyway, the challenges are going to be big enough that we'll probably be coming together for new solutions just out of desperation for the campus.
Do you have a sense, are the deans reacting in the same way? That can't be. There must be a variation among them as to which are sympathetic and want to follow along and which aren't.
The entrepreneurial deans, like John Bollinger, are very supportive of her. And I've done a fair amount of discussion with John Bollinger about the engineering library, and I don't see that he sees any distinction between men and women. He just looks for quality, and if you can keep up with him and stay ahead of him, you must be okay. And he's just entrepreneurial, and he and she are going to work together well, I think. The people who haven't been the strongest deans on the campus are being very quiet. And I think two of the most interesting and probably important people among the deans would be Dave Cronin and Leo Walsh. And Dave Cronin is continuing to be himself. I don't see anything that would indicate that he either is going to respond remarkably positively to her, nor is he going to be negative and try to make things not happen because of her being here. He just seems to be a sort of straight arrow, and he's going on in his path. And Leo Walsh is taking a stronger voice in many of the meetings now, questioning things. Foundation people came to talk about the foundation, and he questioned things and showed displeasure. Jim Hickman is another, I think, influential and important dean for the campus, and he's being supportive of the directions that she wants to take, but I think he's getting tired fast. I don't think he actually knew what the pace was going to be like. And then when they made the commitment last year to try to raise the matching money for the new business school, it added another layer, and he just looks tired all the time.
Yes, I just heard about $4,000 he has.
Yeah.
I mean,
million.
Million, yes.
But John Bollinger already has all of his administration in place, and he's been there a long time, and he's a younger man, and he's just chugging. gung-ho. So, she may, well, of course she's going to have key appointments. Dave will retire. Bob Bach will retire shortly. Who else? A number of, Bernie will probably retire.
Mm-hmm.
Or step down from being a vice chancellor, and I'll miss that. I really like
working
with him.
You like working with Bernie.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's quite on Donna's wavelength yet, but he's welcoming all the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's proving herself to be more of an academic than anybody thought she actually was, and I think that's a pleasant surprise for everybody. What else shall I talk about?
Well, would you comment on Phil Certain? I've come to realize what a major role he's... I mean, he's been working with this minority question ever since it came up or exploded. And you sound as if you're very favorably impressed with him. Is that right?
Yes. He's a hell of a nice...
...in the program. Now, I think they have some pragmatically some realization. They have to be able to give.
I mean, he's been working with this minority question ever since... It came up or exploded. And you sound as if you're very favorably impressed with him. Is that right?
Yes. He's a hell of a nice guy. He came to be associate vice chancellor while Irv was still here. So he was associate vice chancellor for academic affairs. And then, bingo, Irv resigned. Bernie became acting chancellor. And all of a sudden, overnight, I think maybe only after 2 or 3 months, Phil became... Got it?
Just repeat the...
Phil Certain came in and became acting vice chancellor very shortly after he'd moved from chemistry into this higher level of administrative responsibility, at the same time that all of the academic staff Hayes Hill titling was going on the campus. It was going on, and he came in during the process of it. An absolute mess from beginning to end. Made everybody angry, and it's going to take years to work out of it, I think. And he and I had a lot to do because we had taken an approach in the libraries that started in before I got here that culminated in a librarian's titling activity in 1984-85 that was just for the librarians. And it was as a result of a long period of hard work to try to get a career ladder so that there were 4 places that you could be promoted to on performance and achievement. You didn't have to be a supervisor. Mm-hmm. Well, we had implemented that, and in the course of doing that had devised a way of trying to keep salaries balanced between administrative responsibilities and performance and achievement responsibilities, apart from how many people you supervise and so forth. And having gone through this kind of activity about 5 times in other institutions, I really know the ins and outs of things like this. Nobody here had done it before. And by the time that we were done, the process was okay. We had lots of discussions about the process among the librarians as we went along. What was not okay was the result of the process, because many, many people in the general library system and in a few other libraries on campus felt that they were at a much higher level of activity than their career and vita actually showed. So that when you compared the whole range of the most active librarian to the least active librarian, there were more people who thought they were up here at the top end than actually were. And when the titles were done that first time around, there were a lot of unhappy people. And for me, it was a question of, if you don't make the statement the first time that you do this of high standards and your true assessment of the person, you might as well give it up forever, because you can never adjust the fact that you didn't assess people with standards they could understand, but standards that were fairly applied to everybody and that were realistically focused. And the result is, I'm sorry, Sylvia, you're not a senior academic librarian, which is the 4th level. You're actually an academic librarian 1. And that's not easy for people to hear when there has never been an evaluation process in the library. And Joe Trace was really not a very good administrator of things, and most of what happened, I think, happened here because the librarians sort of worked around him or got him going in right direction sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, Phil came into the middle of that because we had a couple of grievances. I guess only one that actually became a grievance that went to a faculty committee to look at because it was from a faculty librarian. And so he really... He didn't come in on that grievance, actually. That in 86, 87, there was the whole titling activity for all of the academic staff. And during that occasion, the people who run the special libraries on campus, the very small libraries like the demography library and the primate library, and, they all felt, because they ran a library, that they should be in the part of the librarian series that wasn't the normal librarians. They should be in the part that was called the director's series. Mm-hmm. And the director's mm-hmm. series are people with who spend more of their time administering something than they spend their time running something. And in actual fact, here there are just, I guess we must have only six directors or something like that. And they're responsible for 100 people and, you know, $6 million budgets, and here's somebody who's running a library that's no bigger than this room, who felt that the definition applied to them, and I fought that, mm-hmm. and it did not please them, and we had some meetings where they tried to tell me I was wrong, and I told them no, I was right, and and that's when Phil and I started talking, because they started going to the people that they reported to, who would then call me or they would call Phil, and I'd explain mm-hmm. how they couldn't possibly think that they could be in this series. And Phil finally got together with me and Judy Craig to try to negotiate a compromise. And the compromise that we negotiated was that there would be the librarian series, the director series for the senior level administrators, and the special librarian series. And the special librarian series would parallel the librarian series and would have the same kind of criteria and the same salary levels. And Phil did that compromise very well, because it didn't then even, it didn't completely please the special librarians, but they went along with it, and the deans went along with it too. And that was my first introduction to him. Almost everybody here who was involved in administering that Hayes Hill business had never done a personnel system in their life, except for the state classified civil service system, which is not exactly comparable to this activity. Mm-hmm. And they tended to want to give in whenever they came up to a cropper on an issue of definition. The definition of longevity is going to plague this place forever, and the role of longevity in relationship to performance and achievement.
What do you mean?
Well, the Hayes Hill approach to things is an unmodified, basically, classified civil service system where longevity plays into where your salary might fall.
Oh, you mean how long you're, in a position.
Right.
Yeah,
or how long you've been
life,
a,
yes.
No. And what we had done in the library, which I think is an appropriate thing to do, is that years of service have something to say about somebody, maybe the first 3 to 5 years that they're in the profession, because that's the testing time. You have to see if they're growing enough each year. But after that, it doesn't have anything to do with what your ultimate growth is or your performance and achievement each year. I mean, there are people who are in their jobs 40 years and haven't grown an iota. And we had already agreed among the librarians in 84, 85 that we'd look at the first 3 years of longevity in the time in the position, and then after that we wouldn't look at it anymore. We'd look just at performance and achievement. And that has also been a big topic of discussion about Hayes Hill, and the librarians are an example, I think, to many people of the two major issues. The first is, what is the role of your years in service in terms of how much money you should be making? And the second is, what is the impact on your salary of performance and achievement outside your primary assignment? Mm-hmm. So your primary assignment is, if you're a cataloger, it's to catalog. We've called performance and achievement, similar to the faculty model, service, scholarship, and teaching, and encouraging the full professional life, mm-hmm. so that you bring back to the library things that you're learning outside the library. And there are many people who would prefer not to have performance and achievement factored in as strongly as it is in Hayes Hill. And then there's some other people who think it's not strong enough. And there are some people, longevity is the same thing. And I think the closer you are to holding the belief that the academic staff should be unionized, the more you focus on the importance of years of service and the lack of importance of performance and achievement. Mm-hmm. And it looks to me, in going to the academic staff assembly meetings now, that there are more people who are committed to performance and achievement. Not they are also the people who speak against collective bargaining. And my own personal view is that we'll be lucky, and it will be good for us if that view prevails. Otherwise, I think we might as well just give it up and enter the classified civil service. There won't be any difference left. And it would be disastrous here. It would just be disastrous.
But how much did you have to say about the stipulations of Hayes Hill? Weren't they a given when they came to you?
Well, not exactly, because we had already done it in 84-85. We had a whole framework in place for, we already had a salary, set of salary mm-hmm. guidelines. We already had criteria. We already had a career ladder. We had already differentiated salary for responsibilities from salary for performance and achievement. And when Hayes Hill came here, I fought long and hard to keep those things in their interpretation of what they were going to do for everybody. And in fact, all the librarians were really worried that they were going to be deprofessionalized some way by Hayes Hill, and they wanted to keep what we had gained the first year. So I really did influence them a great deal. And we, a number of us here, met with the Hayes Hill staff.
So they adopted some of your methods?
Pretty much adopted them all and gave us even something more.
But
that
I mean, for other people than librarians as well?
No.
Hmm.
No. And actually, I think a lot of the academic staff people on the campus think the librarians have made out like bandits in this whole thing. I mean, they have, the career ladder is better, the salaries, the catch-up money, there were two components, and so it ended up being more money, and the librarians got half of it 2 years sooner than anybody else did. We have now a peer review process that's beginning for the promotion and performance and achievement, and most other areas don't even have the concept of performance and achievement promotion. And an enormous amount of information shared during the course of the whole 84-85 up to this point in time. The librarians sometimes forget everything that they've achieved in it, and they complain a little bit. And in fact, a librarian in law is very, very angry and is a part of, I've forgotten which union she's a member of, and in their union newsletter has castigated me for skimming the money off the catch-up and giving it to the senior administrators, and tends to misinterpret a lot of things. And
yes, I've heard about that.
Barb Meyer, yeah. Mm. And took it to the Academic Assembly, and they've set up a number of committees to work on it. And from what I hear from people on the committees is they think the librarians have made out like bandits. So it'll be an interesting year to see how some of that comes out. I think that's another thing that's really encouraging about Donna Shalala. She's, first of all, she's aware of the fact that when you make decisions in this area, you've got to think about the implications for unionization or not. And I don't think the thinking was clear at all on the campus. I mean, some decisions that were made that were just forcing people into boxes where the only thing they could do to protect themselves would be to unionize.
And example.
If the bill 2 years ago that included the catch-up money for academic staff, if that bill had not included legislating governance responsibilities for the academic staff of their own policies, the money would have come, and people would have continued to have no voice in the policies, no working voice that they could see in the policies that affected them. The money would have been given out in ways that may or may not been acceptable, but could never look acceptable. And I think the movement would have been very much toward unionization. It was that close. Mm-hmm. And putting that governance amendment on the bill, I think, was a brilliant thing to do.
And who was responsible for that?
A woman in the legislature, and I can't remember her name. She just decided it was a good idea, introduced it as an amendment to the bill, and it passed. So the money was given on the stipulation for catch-up for academic staff, I think, on two stipulations. One, you had to introduce a governance mechanism for academic staff, and two, you had to hire somebody to come and tell you how to reward the salaries appropriately, the catch-up money. And so that's how System hired Hayes Hill to come in and review the whole situation and set up this structure for it. I think now, if the Academic Staff Assembly was not perceived by its members or by people outside it to be able to do anything, people would give up on the note. It would just be a phantom of governance participation, and again, there would be a strong move to unionize. If Hayes Hill isn't cleaned up and some of the salary equity issues yet to be reviewed, if that work isn't done, I think it's a very important and delicate time right now. And she is sensitive to all of those issues. I talked with her briefly about it. And she thinks that there are some equity issues that have yet to be addressed. And she's old friends with Catherine Lyle and System, and she's talked it over with Catherine, and Catherine agrees, so that both System and the campus will look at those equity issues. She's aware that if people are going to feel responsible, they have to be responsible. So she's chairing those meetings herself, and they're going to be working on things that are important that will result in policies that are meaningful. And I think that there's probably enough, the timing is right, that and her coming is right, that she will make that governance mechanism work for them. And then in the end, they will be more responsible than we will be more responsible than we have in the past. And I don't think then that if the collective bargaining is voted on as a possibility, I kind of think that it wouldn't pass, because people are now being a little hopeful about things.
I wonder, it sounds, one wonders how she could possibly have time to add something like that to her schedule.
Well, she's a person, I think, who looks at the most dangerous issues. And she tries to, in fact, she said this when we interviewed her, because I was on the search committee. She said, I always try to anticipate. Every year, at the beginning of the year, I try to anticipate what's going to happen this next year. When I make a decision about something I'm going to say in public, I try to anticipate the results of it and how it's going to appear in headlines. And she does, you know. And I think that unionization is something to really anticipate and look at, and so she's going to do that. Barb Meyer had generated enough letters to her prior to her coming, talking about how Gapin had skimmed the money off the top and things like that. There was a pattern I noticed during the course of some of her visits that articles in the Cardinal about the library were timed to, they only appeared when she was here on the campus for a visit. I noticed that pattern after the second visit when, you know, there had been a couple of weeks in between, and the first article had said one of three, and then nothing happened. Then finally, Donna came back to the campus and article two came out, and I thought, holy shit, these stinkers. And so clearly she was alerted to the sensitivity of the issue, and it's a big issue. She anticipated the minority issue, but of course that was very clear, but she knew when she came the kind of report that had to be produced. And her view, I think, was, I heard her say in one meeting, that the recommendations that were coming from the Coalition Minority Committee were recommendations meant for the problems of the 70s and the 80s for minority affairs. And what she wanted to do was to put together a proposal that had steps and directions that were for the problems of the 90s. And I clearly drove everybody in the direction of doing that. I think she anticipated a lot more trouble with the ROTC question. But then maybe it was going to be, or else they were effective behind the scenes to get it put right in the right perspective. And then she did have a grand opportunity for the amicus. Whatever it is that we're going to help try to promote when the, I mean, 2 weeks after the ROTC meeting, a federal judge ruled that the ROTC.
The California.
Yeah.
Thing. Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's very lucky. Are you aware, from where you sit, of the extent to which system puts things on her that she has to attend to and which she couldn't possibly foresee?
I see some of that, I suppose, a little bit of it, from brief comments that she might make in a dean's meeting about discussions she's been having. I've heard that she, well, let me step back from that just one minute. From the time that I came here, in fact, the first month that I was here, there were two major issues that I had to resolve, and they were both highly political and they were both very expensive. The online catalog, the development for that had been going on for years and millions of dollars had been invested, and it was being publicly criticized by the librarians here as being not cost effective, not responsive to their needs, and just generally wasn't going to work. And I had to make a decision about whether or not to continue with it or to drop it altogether and either try to substitute something else or just not do anything. The second thing that I had to do was, the memorial edition was being approved, and during the course of that first 6 months it got approved, and then Irv, in order to get the large animal holding facility, divided the project into two phases. And so what was funded in that first biennium was the shell and not the insides of the building. And in both of those both of those discussions, I had an immediate opportunity and great pressure to work closely with the budget people on this campus and to work with the system budget people, because they had they were very much interested in the online catalog and in the memorial edition. And I have not had any difficulty at all in working with system people at that level on that, on those two major projects. We have been rigorous. I mean, I've generated 2 feet of paper justifying the completion of the memorial edition at a higher cost in order to get in more compact shelving. And when I do that, first on the campus, I have to explain it to the campus and justify it. To the architect's office, I have to explain it and justify it to the campus planning council. Then we begin to work with system people, and I have to justify it and explain it to them. And then it goes to Department of State Facilities Management, and we justify it and explain it to them. And then it finally goes to the Governor's Planning Commission, where we justify it and explain it again. And at each of those levels, after the introductory time where you're getting to know each other on the campus, and then with the staff that I worked with in system up through Vice President Brown, got support and help and understanding. And we still call each other when there are things coming up and they would like my perspective of it. It might be on another library on another campus. And the same thing was true for the network library system, the online library system. They were eager to make it work. They wanted the facts. We talked about alternatives. They helped support it with funding. And I like them a lot.
Well.
And we work well together.
That's a new one.
Yeah. I just, in fact, I'm fairly good friends with some people now that I've worked with through all of this. And I never have seen the difficulties that I think Irv must have faced, except that I think we brought a lot on ourselves. You can't do today the things that we were trying to do. You can't not be responsive. You can't keep thinking the system is going to go away. You can't expect a new president to come in and not appear to be able to handle the job. And handling the job means he's got to do stuff. Mm-hmm. So you might as well figure out how to help him do stuff. And then keep the proper balance going in there. And, you know, she knows all that. And she knew Catherine because they worked together in HUD. She knows systems. She knows politics. She knows how to get people to do things. She knows she's going to work with him. She knows she's not going to embarrass him public. She knows she's going to try to help him. I've heard that she's probably spending more time with legislators right now than she is with the Board of Regents, but I think that's very sensible. And I don't ever have the feeling, Laura, that she feels that she's having to spend too much time there putting out fires. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that she knows what she's doing, and she's spending just the amount of time there that she wants to spend there to try to get things to happen.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I've got to go to a meeting at 3.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I'm sorry.
All right. We haven't even.
No, I'm sorry. You can tell me not to talk so much.
Next time.